You would just remain seated as the folks in the congregation. We will stand up in a minute. We're going to read a lengthy passage from 1 Samuel, and then we will stand up and read a passage from Proverbs. I'm going to begin preaching through the book of 1 Samuel on Sunday night, the very first sermon you will hear on Sunday morning, this morning. So tonight we will deal with the rest of the first chapter of Samuel. I thought this would be extremely appropriate for our meeting this morning. So 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 1. Let's remain seated, that way we don't have to stand up forever. Verse 1. Now there was a certain man of, and Raphael, you were talking about hard names to pronounce. Anytime you have an I-M in English, King James, that is a plural or a dual. I know you know the difference. Hebrew has singular, plural, and dual, meaning there's two. Ramoth Thaim Zophim. And you say, what does that mean? It means a place that's lifted up with two hills. It meant something to them. What does it mean to us? This morning when I was sleeping, I was thinking about places I grew up, and I wondered, I lived on top of the bluffs. You had to go up out of the river systems to get there, and one hill was called Doug Hill, and one hill was called Stimler Hill. I don't know where the names come from. I don't know if they still call them that. That's one of these places. It's a nowhere place, folks. Of Mount Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroram, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephrathite. And he had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah. Hannah's name is related to the Hebrew word for grace. And the name of the other was Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. And this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. So this man would have been a believer, a godly man on the whole, trying to do the right things. We'll get to those two wives later. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priest of the Lord, were there. And when the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah his wife and to all her sons and her daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave, and the King James says, a worthy portion. Some say a double portion. That is an extremely weird Hebrew phrase. We'll stick with worthy or double. For he loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb. And her adversary, Peninnah, the other wife, also provoked her sore, for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. And as he, Elkanah, did so year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, so she, you're a lot of these he-she's. Elkanah's the he, Hannah's the first she, Peninnah, what does she do? Every year, look at me folks, every year when you go to worship, Peninnah is rubbing it in to Hannah, you don't have children. So she provoked her sore, provoked her therefore, she wept and did not eat. Then said Elkanah her husband to her, Hannah, why weepest thou? Why eatest thou not? And why is thy heart grieved? Am not I better to thee than 10 sons? So Hannah rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh, and after they had drunk. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord. And she, Hannah, was in bitterness of soul and prayed unto the Lord and wept sore. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou will indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life. And there shall no razor come upon his head. That is called a Nazarite vow. Folks, which is simply this. It was simply a vow where a person could do it themselves, and sometimes the parents did. They gave the child, or you gave yourself to the Lord, and you wanted everybody to know, the only thing I do 100% of the time is serve the Lord. That's the idea. It was a visual thing. 12. And it came to pass, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli marked her mouth. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart, only her lips moved, and her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she had been drunken. Is that the first thing you would think if you saw somebody praying silently? Answer the question. Yes, it would be if your son was Eli and Hophni and Phinehas. See, there's little hints as to what's going to happen later here. Eli was used to some very abusive things in the temple, sad to say. It goes on to say in verse 14, and Eli said unto her, well, how long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. And Hannah answered and said, no, my lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaiden for a daughter of Belial, a worthless individual, Noel, Walang Sylvie, that's what we're talking about. For out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. Then Eli answered and said, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him. And she said, let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight. So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. And they rose up in the morning early and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house to Ramah, same place. It means a lifted up place, hill country. And Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. Wherefore it came to pass, when the time was come about after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son and called his name Samuel. Samuel is related or sounds like the word heard of God. And then she even explains, because I have asked him of the Lord, she named the son Samuel. Tonight we will deal with this text and more and finish this up. If you will turn your Bibles, by the way, the sermon is going to come from this text. You'll need to keep your hand here. Turn your Bibles to Proverbs 29, please. And now you can stand. Proverbs 29. I'm going to introduce the book of 1 Samuel by dealing with the subject of adversaries. Hannah had an adversary that provoked her. And I think it's very appropriate that we look at the process of having an adversary in your life. Do you have any adversaries? Do you have any people that irritate you? Please do not look at your spouse. This is the, what is this? What do you call this? Valentine's Day, I couldn't remember. Don't laugh. For the first time in decades, I bought my wife flowers. Actually, I stole them, but, you know, that's okay. Proverbs 29 and verse 9. If a wise man contendeth with a foolish man, you get in an argument with a fool. Whether he rage or laugh, it makes no difference if you're blowing up at the guy or laughing at the guy, guess what? There is no rest. There is no solution there. Proverbs 29, verse 11. A fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. Verse 20. Seest thou a man hasty in his words? There is more hope of a fool than of him. This morning, I'm going to introduce with these three verses, but we're going to talk about adversaries. I'm going to give you the whole title, if I remember, at the end of the sermon. But here's the sermon. Adversaries. You can't live with them. I'm going to add something to that at the end. We're going to talk about adversity and adversaries this morning from this text. Our Father, I ask your help and blessing on this day. Lord, this certainly is not something that I thought of on the way to the pulpit this morning. I would ask that I will be able to be clear, emphatic, powerful. Your word would help, encourage, challenge, and that we would come to grips with those things in our life, whether they be human adversaries or issues in our lives that are adversarial. We would know as believers what to do with both. This we ask in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. If a wise man contendeth with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh. You ever get in an argument with a fool? Whether you explode or whether you try, nothing works. A fool uttereth all his mind. He's always got to tell people what he thinks. But a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. Seest thou a man hasty in his words? There is more hope of a fool than of him. I had read these verses at this stage of my life at least 76, 77, 78, 79. I had at least read these verses probably 10 times or more. I knew they were in the book of Proverbs. But that's as far as the verses ever got in my life. Do you know the one I'm talking about? You know they're there, you've read them, you moved on, they didn't mean much. Until a guy came into my life by the name of Al. I started working in microbiology at Great Lakes. I was a second class corpsman at the time. I'd been in 3.5 years, maybe something like that. Al was a first class corpsman. He was my boss. He had been in 20 years. He was on the speedy rate of making first class. He was a drunk, he was a drugger, and he was a mess. But back in the dark days of the end of Vietnam era, you could go through the Navy and just hang on and retire. And that's what he was doing. And Al, shockingly enough, had an amazing way of irritating me to death. Pretty much every day, he would irritate me. If I worked on the weekend, in microbiology, you had to go in for 4 hours on Saturday and 4 hours on Sunday. You would take all of the stuff that was new, and you would lay it out, and you would have to streak it and put it on plates and put it in the incubator. And the stuff in the incubator, you'd have to pull out, look at, examine, do a bunch of different tests, and do some other work. By the way, maybe you don't mind this. Al didn't have a life. He'd run off two or three women in his marriages because of his drinking. So he didn't have a life. He would come in, and I would get there early in the morning because I wanted to come to church. So I would go down there like 6 in the morning so I could come to church here. Al would get there before me. I don't care what time I got there. He'd get there before me. He'd look at all the work to see if I was going to do it right. Now, if you do that to me, I'm going to slug you. If you want to look at my work and see if I'm going to do it right, I got news for you. You do the work. Oh, he would irritate. You say, do you get angry? Oh, this guy would irritate me. And it was like, I know what I'm doing. I know how to do the work. I don't need a mother looking over my shoulder. He loved to irritate. Did I say he liked to irritate me? He also liked to argue. And when I was younger, I liked to. I didn't have any of Jim Duncan's. Jim Duncan likes to argue too, but he doesn't. I do it with a sledgehammer. He does it with a scalpel. Do you know the difference? Jim would, you know, his. Who said this? Dr. Moritz said this of somebody. He had the ability to cut your head off, and you didn't know your head was cut off until you turned your head to spit, and your head fell off. That's Duncan. He's me. Where's my sledgehammer? Every day we were fighting. Every day we were arguing. He irritated me no end. I wanted to go somewhere between beating him up, strangling him, getting him out of my life, anything I could do. Till one day, please look at me. One day I read these verses again. If a wise man contendeth with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh, there is no rest. A fool does what? Uttereth all his. All of a sudden, I was looking at him as the fool, and all of a sudden, the scripture was pointing at me saying, guess who the fool is? And then verse 20 was the sledgehammer on my head. Seest thou a man hasty in his words? There is more hope of the fool than of him. And all of a sudden, through a guy by the name of Al, I won't say his name, I still remember, I all of a sudden started learning the Bible. Because I realized I had been the fool. I had let him irritate me. I had let him get me angry. I had let him pull my chain. I had let him do these things. And I was worse than the fool was. What do we learn about adversaries and adversity from this text? Look, if you would, at verse 6 and 7. Would you please? We're going to pick this up and bring this home. By the way, this is going to be from the text. This is not a sermon. This is a Bible sermon. Verse 6 and 7, please. Here we have Elkanah, the husband. We have two wives, Hannah and Penina. And they're going up to Shiloh. Jerusalem is not yet the capital because we don't even have a king yet. We're going up to Shiloh, and they're going there to worship. In verse 6, and it says, notice the language, her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret. Verse 7, and as he did, so year by year, I mean, you know, from what we can tell, Elkanah was a godly man. He wanted to take his family and do what the Bible taught, go to worship in the place where the tabernacle was and the Ark of the Covenant was. He went there every year, year by year. When she went up to the house of the Lord, so she provoked her. So here you got Elkanah going up, you got Penina going up, you got Hannah going up, and every time we go up to worship, every time I can see it, Elkanah's bringing his sacrifices and his offerings. The two wives are there. Penina has her children. We'll talk about that later. Hannah has no children. And every time Penina's over there saying, do you ever watch kids? Now you wouldn't stick out your tongue. Have you had adults stick out their tongue at you? I have. Every time the adversary, by the way, the first point, are you ready? This is the quickest. I'm going to do it quickly. There are always adversaries. No matter where you live, no matter where you work, no matter what you do, no matter how perfect your conditions are, look at folks, somebody has something they're sticking you with. Sometimes they're nice people, sometimes they're not, but there are always adversaries. You look in Jesus' ministry, you look at Paul's. I'm going to read a few verses. You don't have to turn there. 1 Timothy 1, verse 20, Paul says this, of whom is Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have delivered unto Satan. 2 Timothy 1, 15, this know also, that all they which are in Asia be turned away from me, of whom are Phygellus and Hermogenes. We don't know who these people were, but they were people that were Paul's adversaries. 2 Timothy 2:17, and their word will eat as doth a canker or gangrene, of whom is Hymenaeus and Philetus. So we get Hymenaeus, we get Alexander, we got Phygellus, we got Hermogenes, we got a bunch of people sticking it to Paul. How about 2 Timothy 4, verse 9? Do thy diligence, Timothy, to come unto me, for Demas hath forsaken me. We got Demas that departed. 2 Timothy 4:14. Alexander the coppersmith did me much evil. The Lord reward him according to his works, of whom be thou ware also, Timothy, for he hath greatly withstood our words. Please look at me, friend. You're going to have adversity. There's no way that you can go to a church where the pastor has the magic ingredients where you can say, man, I heard the sermon today, and I'm going to live on a higher plane. Woo! Good luck on that one. Everybody in the Bible has adversity and adversaries, people that are doing things to provoke you, hurt you, irritate you, make you angry, make you upset. By the way, they come from many places. Now, number two, would you look back at verse 1? Now we're going to go to the second idea, which I hope you actually have a Bible and are doing some thinking this morning. Verse 1. Now there was a certain man of just some city up in the hills of Mount Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah. It gives a long history of Elkanah's family, and we don't know any of them. Verse 2. And he had two what? Does that strike you as odd, anybody? Do you think that's normal? Do you know of godly people in the Old Testament that were tried to do right, you can only think of two people like this. There's another guy in Chronicles. You don't normally have multiple wives. The name of the one was Hannah, and the name of the other was Penina. And Penina had children, but Hannah had no children. Verse 6, and this man went up out of the city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, and the priest of the Lord were there. We continue, if you would, in verse 6. And her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret because the Lord had shut up her womb. And as he did, as Elkanah did year by year when Hannah went with him up to the house of the Lord, so she, Peninnah, provoked her. Therefore Hannah wept and did not eat. Number two, folks, this is where I hope this is a very practical sermon this morning. Number one, you will always have adversaries. Always. Number two, adversaries come in many forms. Many forms. You have to put yourself in this story and you have to feel a woman weeping over not having a child. You have to see yourself weeping when Peninnah, and by the way, Peninnah is the first adversary in the story. I call her the malicious adversary. She is the adversary that maliciously tries to harm you. Someone that is out to get you. We all of us have holes in our life. We have weak spots. We have lacks. We have unfulfilled dreams. We have soft spots. The Peninnahs of this world always know where to strike. They know the soft spot. They know that unfulfilled dream. They know exactly. There's always the malicious person that looks at you in your life and says, I know exactly where to get her. I'm going to get her right, right in her heart, right where she's most sensitive. She doesn't have children. Peninnah is the malicious adversary. The weekend my father died, I don't know why this came up. My mother was talking to me and she said, my dad had an older brother, 2 years older. He was nothing special. Actually, he was less than special. But my dad's older brother ridiculed my dad his whole life. And he would come and mock my dad because he would say, I live in a better house than you live in. I have more money than you have. And for whatever reason, Mom said that would bother my dad, even though really my dad was better off than him. It would just maliciously, his older brother would ridicule my dad. He would ridicule my dad because my dad and Mom wouldn't go someplace if the children weren't invited. If you're going to have a drunken party, and my dad was unsaved, but if you're going to have a drunken party and the kids had to stay home because you wanted to drink and stuff, Dad and Mom wouldn't go. Dad made that decision. But his own brother was constantly, it was the malicious adversary. Well, let's continue down this road. Look at verse 4, would you? There's a second kind of adversary. I've said this, folks, there are always adversaries. Number two, adversaries come in many forms. There is the malicious adversary. Are you all ready? This is the one that I worry about being. Verse 4. And when the time was come, a time was that Eli offered, he gave to Peninnah his wife and all her sons and her daughters portions. But unto Hannah he did what? He did either, some translations say double portion, a worthy portion, something where everybody knew who was the favored wife. Is that a good, Daniel, Ade, did you grow up in a polygamous home? You didn't have any problems in the polygamous home between rivalry, did you? Constant, right? By the way, look at me, friends. We're going to read a couple more verses. Elkanah becomes an adversary. Of what kind? Elkanah is a typical husband. He's the oblivious, well-intentioned adversary. He wasn't an adversary on purpose. He was just a little, look, guys, clueless. By the way, men, if your wife says she doesn't like flowers, what does that mean? I've had guys come, my wife doesn't like that. Oh, are you that clueless? The answer would be, yes, my wife doesn't like all that stuff. Listen, besides a Louie here making me sick this morning, Friday I'm here at school. Lois calls me. Lois calls me. She says, Pastor Warren, there's a guy here with flowers. And he wants, and she says, should I let him take the flowers back or do you want me to take them back? And I said, I'll come and take them back. Who are they for? I asked her, and she said, they're for Nicole. Dave made me sick Friday. By the way, did your wife like them, Dave? Oh, they were from Anders and from your sons. Okay, quit lying. By the way, guys, Elkanah, in my opinion, please look at me, I'm going to read some things in a minute. He became the oblivious, well-intentioned adversary. You got two wives. First of all, no woman's ever going to have two husbands. They don't even want the one they got, let alone another one. But some guys think this is cool. And then you treat one better than you do the other. That's not going to cause problems, right? Oh my goodness. The dumbest thing ever spoken by a male, and unfortunately most males speak this. Look at verse 8, please. Then said Elkanah to her husband, Hannah, do you really have to ask a question this stupid, guys? What are you crying for? Boy, that always, women like that. What are you crying for? What's your problem? You're dead. You're going to be sleeping in the garage for a week. Continue. Why aren't you eating? And why is thy heart grieved? And my favorite of all. It's hard to read this in public. Do you really think the wife loves the husband more than the children? Do you even have to ask that question? So he says, honey, am I not better to thee than 10 sons? And she's thinking, no, not even one son, not even a daughter. You're not anything special. Friend, please look at me. I'm being funny, but this ain't funny, is it? Because here's Hannah, godly woman. She doesn't have children. She's got one malicious person over here that keeps reminding her. Yes? And then you got poor Elkanah. He is so clueless. So I wrote some things down, guys. And by the way, I wrote this for down first. I wrote this down. So I have one statement I want all of us to hear. We all have a few Elkanahs, but worse than that, some of us are Elkanah. Some good things. There's no question. He loved his wife. Secondly, he took care of his wife. Even more than that. But he married two women. Ade, did that work well in your family? How did your mother feel about that? Everybody had the problems. Trying to get dad's attention, correct? And your father had how many? Five wives. You say, this is built into the system, folks. So here's a godly guy. He's so clueless. And by the way, if you read the story, I don't have time to get into the details. When it mentions Hannah first, probably because she was the first wife and she didn't have children, so guess what he did? He married another woman to have children. But you say, Pastor, but I love... Oh, I haven't met too many women that say, oh yeah, let's have three or four, no problem. Mm-hmm. He married two women. He didn't have a clue about the jealousy, power struggles, and conflict. So my guess is, while Penina was sticking her tongue out at Hannah, he was off over here in la-la land. He didn't even know there was a problem. Of course, he didn't get it. And may I say this, most of all, by the way, I'm kind of preaching as I'm explaining this, he would have been better if he hadn't opened his mouth. Ladies, there's a secret. I had a professor in school that used to say this. Now, I don't practice this saying, but I should. The professor always used to say, guys, here's my first piece of counsel for marriages. Your wife needs your shoulder, not your big, fat mouth. How do you like that, guys? And guess what all males like to do? What's your problem? Don't you think I'm better than 10 sons? Am I not handsome? Am I not wonderful? Listen, my wife would trade 10 of me for one of Nathan. You say, why? Because he's better looking, sweeter, nicer. Friends, adversaries come in different forms. There's the malicious ones. There's the oblivious, well-intentioned ones. By the way, you say, what should have Elkanah done? Men, what should have Elkanah done? How about this? Rejoice with them that rejoice and weep with them that weep. Have you ever heard that verse? He should have been hugging his wife saying, let's go pray and ask God to give us a child. What was he saying? Come on, look how handsome I am. I'm better than 10 sons. Oh my goodness. He should have been doing something else. Silence is better than talking, gentlemen. Job 2:13, Job's friends were pretty good for a week. It says, so they sat down with him. I love that. With him upon the ground 7 days and seven nights, and none spake a word unto him. And if they would have continued there, they would have been perfect. Look at verse 12, please. There's a third kind of adversary in this passage. I'm not sure exactly what to call this person. Do you call this the callous adversary? Do you call this the know-it-all adversary? Do you call this the careless adversary? Please, folks, get the feeling of the text. Look at verse 12. And it came to pass, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli marked her mouth. So you have on one side, you have a malicious adversary goading you every possible minute. On the other side, you have clueless people. Please look at me. I'm one of those clueless people. There's people in this room that struggle. I don't know what to say. Most of the time, it's best to say nothing. But I'm a pastor. I read. I study. I probably think I know more than I do. So I start talking, and I become Elkanah. Worse than that, you got Eli. Here she finally goes. She's had enough. She goes to the Lord. She's pouring out her heart, and there's a dumb guy named Eli that thinks she's drunk. He is the callous, clueless, know-it-all guy. Look at verse 13. This text says, now Hannah spake in her heart, and only her lips moved. But her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she had been drunken. That is the dumbest conclusion, except when you know his sons. You're thinking, is that the first thing? Here's a woman crying, and you think she's drunk? What kind of a conclusion is that? And then he even asked her, he's such a kind fella. So you have the malicious adversary, you have the clueless adversary, men usually, and then you have the adversary that is, I don't know what to call him, cold, careless, callous. What are you doing, woman? You drunk? How long will you be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. Eli was a guy that had all the answers before he knew any of the questions. He didn't need the facts, he just knew. Verse 5 and verse 6, now we come to the hard part. Everyone look at me. I'm going to be very gentle here. I'm not going to raise my voice, and if you prefer to go to sleep, do so quickly. I must say this because we got another problem. The young lady that just left. Do you know there's a fourth adversary in this story? And anybody that has a brain knows this adversary exists. I'm not saying this person is an adversary. I'm saying this person shows up as an adversary. Are you waiting? Are you listening? It's easy to pick on Peninnah. It's easy to see the dumb husband. What's wrong with you, woman? Here, woman, you just lost a child. What's the big deal? We can have another one. That's men. Over here, you got Eli. I don't know what to say about him. Do you know the fourth one? Who is it? Who was the reason she didn't have children? Who was the reason she didn't have children? Do you think she knew that? Yes or no? Read verse 6 and 7, please. Or 5, excuse me, 5. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah. But the Lord had shut up her womb. And her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret. Why? Because the Lord had shut up her womb. The fourth adversary is God himself. I call this adversary not the malicious one, not the clueless, well-intentioned one, not the cold-hearted one, the know-it-all one. In this story, friend, God himself is the unspeakable, maybe we should say the unthinkable adversary, the unmentionable adversary. He's the adversary, but when you, please look at me, friend, when you go home at night and you put yourself, you sit on the bed and you swing your legs up on the bed and you put your head on the pillow, if you're a believer, you know something. I could have children if God wanted me to. Yes. And that child I lost didn't have to die if God had chosen differently. And oftentimes in the back of people's minds and in the bottom of their heart, there's some serious questions. And while you're being clueless, blabbing, giving answers that everybody already knows, and not weeping with the person that's struggling and not praying with the person, in the back of their mind. Now, by the way, as far as I know, Hannah never goes here. But I guarantee you she knew about it. I guarantee you she had thought about it. I guarantee you she knew the stories about Sarah in Genesis 11:30, but Sarah was barren and she had no child. Or Rebekah and Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. Or Rachel, it says, and when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. She knew these stories, friend. She knew a parallel story from around the same period of time from a woman. Well, there was a certain man of Zorah of the family of the Danites whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and bare not, the mother of Samson. She would have known these stories. So you say, what's going on? I have said there are always adversaries. There are the malicious adversaries like Penina. There are the clueless adversaries that should be coming along, giving us a hug, praying with us, working forward, but say stupid stuff, don't know what to say, clueless. There's Eli, which comes across to me as a know-it-all, the kind of person, what's wrong with you, woman? Are you drunk? Really? Really? But in the back of our minds, I know Hannah had to think, there's that, I can't speak it, I can't think it, but God has made a choice for me not to have a baby. You say, did she go there? I don't think Hannah did, but look at me, everybody look at me. I am pretty sure Penina would have. Nancy, in the past, we have talked about things like this in Haiti. If someone has a baby that dies, or if someone has a baby with problems, people will come alongside and they will point the finger. The reason you don't have a baby or your baby died is you have sin in your life. You have done wrong. You have done this. And somehow God gets attached to this. So here's a poor lady. She doesn't have a baby. She has someone provoking her. She has someone clueless and well-intentioned but just doesn't get it. She has Eli, calloused and cold-hearted, know-it-all. And then in the back of her mind, maybe. I want to ask you a question. If any of us in this room got what we deserve, where would we go? So any of us can think, yeah, I can look back, 32 years ago I did this, 28 years ago I did this. God is doing what? He's punishing me for what I did wrong. I am sure Penina, when she was sticking out her tongue, was reminding Hannah that the reason you don't have children is God made you barren. I want you to look at verse 4. Did you all notice verse 4? You might want to underline it in your Bible, since this is not a religious story. This is a real story, friend. Notice verse 4. Would you? And when the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Penina his wife and to all her what? Sons and what? So what do we know about Penina? Well, we know that Hannah had no children at this time, and we know that Penina had minimally. She had minimally four. Sounds like probably more than that. We don't know how many, but she had at least two sons and at least two daughters. And by the way, every time you went up to this worship, guess what? How you doing? How your children? Oh, did see what God's done for me? What's wrong with you? What did you do, Hannah? Hannah, what did you do? Did you slip around and do something wrong? By the way, and Christians can get involved in this too. Good, godly little pinheads can make people feel guilty for something they did 35 years ago or 20 years ago or 10 years ago. And we're just sure God is judging me. By the way, I want to say this and we're going to move on. By the grace of God, I don't think Hannah ever went here. She had more theology than that kind of foolishness. By the way, did any of you notice who she prays to? She didn't pray to, oh God, in my back pocket. Well, look at that. Look with me if you would. To chapter 1 and verse 10. Would you look there? I have said so far two basic concepts. There are always adversaries. And adversaries come in many forms. Everybody got that? Many forms? From the malicious to the clueless well-intentioned to the cold-hearted. To understanding, folks, if you're a Christian, you know that God is sovereign. So if I'm struggling with these things, in some way God is the one that's allowed or caused or something me to be here, whatever your issue is. So this person over here can obviously use that to say, this is the reason you have a problem, your sin or something. And over here, a dumb, know-it-all Christian that has all the answers before he has the questions or before she has the questions, they'll tell you the same. So you just, all of a sudden, you're shot from all directions. So, number one, there are always adversaries. Number two, adversaries come in many kinds or many forms. And number three, adversaries and adversity can actually become allies. Here's where the sermon ends and where it begins. Please look at me. There's nobody in this room that's going to escape adversity. There's nobody in this room going to escape problems. Nobody. You come to a crux, a crucible, a crossroads, and what you do right here, because you have whatever problems you have, and you have the people encouraging you, what do? Your adversity, your adversaries can become allies. Or, look at me, you can just keep on sleeping. Stay right where you're at. Do what you've always done. Tonight's sermon is going to pick up here in a different angle. I want you to look at verse 10. So what exactly did Hannah do? And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed unto the Lord and wept sore. And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of what? Do you understand that phrase? She was praying to the God that controls the armies, so to speak, of the look up here, of the universe. Her adversaries became her allies. They brought her to pray and to weep and to ask God and to make a vow. And in that process, Samuel was born, one of the greatest men of the Old Testament. But for every Hannah, there's other people that get nothing, that learn nothing, that grow nowhere. They just stay right where they are. Your adversaries, your adversity can become your ally. Verse 19. And they arose up early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord, and returned and came to their house to Ramah, and Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. Wherefore it came to pass when the time was come about after Hannah had conceived that she bare a son and called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. She's using a word Samuel, El Elohim, the shortened form, the word that means something like, or sounds something like, I have been heard by God. Our adversaries, our adversity can actually become our allies. I want everyone to look at me, and I want to nail this down and be done this morning. About a month ago, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I don't know what day, I preached on growth and grace. Now, I recognize some people never grow. I get that. I don't know why. It's just true. But I will tell you how we grow. That day, I said this. It's you, it's God, and it's Scripture. Did I say that? Let me give you the bad news. There's usually a fourth element. Do you know what that fourth element usually is? Pain. Normally, when we grow, when we look back in our life at the places where we move forward, God brought some sort of an adversary into our life. Maybe it was a malicious one. Maybe it was a clueless, well-intentioned one. Maybe it was a know-it-all that knew all the answers. And maybe we don't even understand what God himself is doing. Why do I have this disease? Why do I have this problem? But my friend, for Hannah, her adversaries became her allies. She let them push her to God. She let them push her to prayer. She let those people push her to begging and asking God to intervene. And God intervened and gave her a son. We'll learn later in chapter 2, more than just a son. Later. But God intervened. So her adversaries and her adversity became an ally. Hear me. When it comes right down to it, I've been watching people too long. Most people never grow. Ever. None. I don't know what we do with adversity. Well, actually, I do. We'll talk about that tonight in the subject of prayer. But at this crossroads, at this point, the story hinges. Now, we've read the story, so we know she prays and God answers her prayer and God gives her a child and she gives the child to the Lord and we rejoice. But understand, humanly speaking, Hannah was at a crossroads. She had to turn left or she had to turn right. She could have been one of these people that just turns left and goes back into her depression and her discouragement and her negativity and her bitterness and all of that stuff. She could have agreed with Penina. She could have gotten even more angry at Bonehead here. She could have gotten infuriated at religion. She could have gotten angry at God because God didn't give me a child. Or she could have allowed her adversaries to push her to God and become an ally at the crossroads of life. And there are always adversaries. Adversaries come in many forms, but those adversaries can either become an ally or they stay an adversary. Please look at me. So 10 years, I heard this week, someone that has connections to this church still telling the same bitterness stories. How do you do that for 10 years? For 5 minutes? You have allowed, when you have an opportunity to allow this to move you forward, you have instead allowed that adversary to remain an adversary. At the crossroads of life, that person that's an adversary will either be a hindrance or they will be a help. You will either have ears that don't hear or you will have ears that hear. You will either be blind or you will have eyes to see. You will either go forward or you will go back. Everybody has this. There are always adversaries. And they come in lots of forms. And hear me. I might be your adversary. I might have done things that absolutely irritate you. I say to you, I'm sorry, welcome to life. I might be the most oblivious person you've ever met. So what? She had one of those too. But you don't hear her 20 years later saying, you know, if I just had a good husband, if I'd just had a good pastor, all of these pressures, they force her forward. They become her ally. They push her towards God, towards prayer, towards making vows, towards making the right decisions. And out of this beautiful situation, I mean, this difficult situation becomes a beautiful situation of a young man that's going to be one of the great prophets in the Bible named Samuel. But it could have gone the other way because we could have just gone back instead of forward. Could have been I hate that person. That person did such and such to me. I'm right. Really? How many years ago was it? 1980? 79? 78? From this pulpit, right up here, a young man stood. Some of you know the young man. The young man went to Bob Jones University. He's a little bit older than my wife, a year or two or three. I think he was in grad school when my wife was an undergrad. The young man was a singer, musician. I remember when he was here. And him talking about, you know, one day he felt pain in his eye, went to the doctor thinking, you know, somebody poked him, you know, elbowed him, whatever. He went there and the doctor looked at his eye and said, you got cancer in your eye. You got to have your eye removed. Would you all look at me? You know, when I hear that testimony, this is what bothers me. It bothers me that I don't hear testimonies from other people. Because we've all had adversity. Who hasn't? Can you name someone who hasn't? My friend, adversity is not the issue. There's always adversity, and it comes in many forms. Will that adversity push me forward? Or will I take that adversity, hug it, and make it the center of my bitter little filthy life, and gripe and complain and whine and hate and share that with people? Or will I allow all of this to move me and say, you know what? This is what God has for me. I want you to turn to one last place, Psalm 119, please. Psalm 119. Psalm 119. You will need to look these verses, please. Friend, if this isn't ringing your bell, you have no bells. Because this is where you live. The difference, by the way, between Ron Hamilton and many other Christians is many other people just get bitter at everybody. Hey, do you ever listen to people? You listen to people's conversation. I'm bitter at this person. I'm bitter at my husband or my wife. I'm bitter at my pastor. You know, Eli's, you know, cold-hearted and know-it-all and hard-hearted. They're even bitter at God. There's only one person they're not bitter at. Thank you, Jim. They don't have, by the way, and the only person that really can make a choice by the grace of God is you. And you can, listen, there's always adversity and adversaries, always, no matter who you are. You never get above it. They come in many forms. They can become, hear me, they can become your ally if you allow them to push you forward. Psalm 119. This is my fourth point this morning. It's simple. Adversaries are probably necessary. I'm thinking you and I will never grow apart from them. Verse 67 of 119. The psalmist says, before I was afflicted, I went astray. But now have I kept thy word. Verse 71, it was good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy statutes. Verse 75, I know, O Lord, that thy judgments are right, and that thou in faithfulness hast afflicted me. Adversaries are with us. I can't give you a pill. Now, please look, if you watch a TV preacher and you send him or her some money, you can live a superior life. But back here in the real world where you live, you're going to have adversity and you're going to have adversaries. And there's going to be many forms. They're not going to be one kind. Some of them are going to come alongside and poke you. Some of them, many of them, are going to be clueless. I'm not happy when I'm the clueless one, but I am. Some of them are going to be the cold-hearted know-it-alls that can pontificate on the stupidest things. Sometimes in the sleeping times, you think maybe God's against you. And then you start thinking, yeah, he has plenty of reasons. And by the way, that has nothing to do with Christianity. That's more voodoo. That's more witchcraft. Because God saves us by grace and out of grace, not for anything that we do before, during, or after salvation. God's not looking back, keeping records so he can punish you. Our adversaries ought to do this, push us forward. And I will say this, adversity and adversaries are probably necessary. I will never move forward until God brings pain in my life. Let's pray. Father,